tonight, huh? Drummer? Come on, you.
Hello, everybody. This is the Drunken UX Podcast, and this is episode number 69, where we are going to be talking with the co-founder of online learning and coding platform, Exorcism.io, though we're just going to call it Exorcism from here on out, but I want to throw it in there just for the start, because that is where you have to go if you want to find it.
That's on the internet.
It is on the internet. That is the one place where you do have to go to find it. We've mentioned it.
I was just going to say, and it's important at this stage early to explain that this isn't about exorcisms. I like to get this in there early as well, because people do often just drop off podcasts very early if this isn't explained. So, exorcism with an E, not exorcism with an O. And I have stories. Anyway.
No, I like it, because there are many times where we have to get the demons out of our systems. So...
This is how you practice that, right?
Exactly.
I think I've got
some people call them
notes,
ghosts in the machine, but given the nature of some of the bugs that I've chased,
this is going to be that kind of show, is it?
Much meaner than that. Folks, I am your host, Michael Feenan.
I'm your other host, Aaron Hill. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing all right. It's about 3,000 degrees here in Kansas today. It is the middle of the afternoon when we are recording, because as you heard, we've got a guest with us this afternoon. So we've aligned our clocks for a little bit of an overseas trip. As a result, I am not drinking anything super fancy today, because I've got work left to do today, but, I'm enjoying a nice cold Pepsi. That's, I think, acceptable for, I think, this show. So I'm going to take that and run with it.
I have, as you both can see, this is a blended drink. It has some rum, some pineapple juice, some creamy coconut, some blue curacao, some triple sec, and a bunch of ice, and it is tasty.
Is this the same thing you described a couple shows ago?
I think it is. Yeah.
The blue slushy.
It's very blue.
It has the consistency of an icy. Yeah. Mm.
Folks, if you want to find us, you can check us out on Twitter or Facebook. You can find us at /DrunkenUX on either of those platforms. Run by Instagram /DrunkenUX Podcast. Or if you want to catch us and chat with us online, just go to drunkenux.com/discord. That'll give you an invite straight into our little Discord channel, and you can find us there. What am I forgetting, Aaron? Does that cover everything? I think that covers everything.
I believe so.
I think that covers everything.
That's it. I think show's over, right?
We're done. I can get back to vacuuming my dirty house. joining us this evening is the co-founder of Exorcism and also the employee well-being platform Kaido. His name is Jeremy Walker. Jeremy, you are coming to us from all the way over in the UK. Thank you for bearing with us as we found the time that worked for everybody. We really appreciate you joining us this evening and for taking the time out of your career over the last few years to create this pretty incredible platform to help folks like Aaron and I learn how to do our job.
It's nice to meet you, Bae. Thank you for having me. It's also really, really hot in England. I imagine my definition of really hot is somewhat different from your definition of really hot. Yesterday was the hottest day in UK history, which meant it was about 32 degrees Celsius here.
Wow.
So I don't know what that is in your American numbers, but
it's about 90-ish.
Yeah, like that was that. I think we had 38 somewhere, which made it the hottest day in UK history. Today's been a bit cooler, but for us British people, this is hot. You know, I get a sweat on walking outside. That's impressive. So
we're actually a little under that, but we're still rising, and our humidity is out of control right now. So it's gonna get nasty here. Let's talk a little bit about Exorcism to get started here. Actually, we're going to talk about it a lot, because that's what the whole episode is. But we have mentioned this, I think, more than probably, I don't know, a half dozen times over past episodes. Pretty much any time we've brought up learning and professional development and you know, trying to further skills or any of this, because it's a platform. I found out about it, I think, towards the middle of about 2018. I know this because we're going to talk about V1 and V2 here, and I started it right there before the switch, because I realized, hey, it's a lot different now when I went back in. But uh, it It's this very cool online platform where if you are interested in coding, if it's something you're already doing, but you want to either further skills or learn skills in maybe an adjacent programming language, that you can go in there and dig in. It's free, and you sign up for your account and just start doing courses. Aaron, I know you and I have talked. You've dug into it now, so you're in the Ruby course, right?
Yeah, so I actually used Exorcism, oh man, it was not quite 10 years ago, but it was a while ago. When what is it, 2013? Probably around 2013, 2014, when it was all command line based. And like you checked out the exercises and then read the README and everything. And I did it for a bit. I remember doing some like small gene sequencing exercises, but I just recently got back into it after we had started talking to you, and I love it. I love what you guys have done with the version 2, and the web interface is awesome. The exercise has been great. I think I'm like halfway through the Ruby track. I've got one or two hard exercises done, a whole bunch of easy and medium ones. Yeah.
I've been doing the JavaScript course. I really had planned by the time we recorded this episode, my goal was to have the JavaScript course done because I'm really excited about getting in and doing mentorship on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been derailed here the last month or so and not gotten through it. So I'm and you know, the thing is, it's like there's a gamification aspect to it as you start digging through. You take one of the core courses and it unlocks all the extra things. Mm-hmm. And I'm a completionist by nature, and so when I start seeing other things opening up, I feel like compelled to complete all of these other little side tasks, and I don't want to move on until I finish them all. Mm-hmm. And it's driving me insane when I look in there and see how many things I have left to do.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I think that's one of the things I enjoy about doing things as well, is that sense of wanting to complete things. And a lot of programmers, I think, fall into that completionist category. So it's something we're trying to play on a little bit more.
So you and Aaron, you mentioned this already. Exorcism was started by you and Katrina Owen back in 2013. My understanding is this originally started kind of as like an in-house tool, right, to help groom developers at a company. Yes.
Yeah. So it was actually just Katrina that started it.
Just Katrina.
And I joined slightly later as co-founder. Well, slightly later, like a few years later. But yeah, so Katrina was working at Turing School, I think, which is a place that takes people who are career changing. And she found that like she needed somewhere where the students she was teaching things to could actually just go and practice the things she was talking about. And so built this in-house just to use it, but also just like, I think, put it on the internet for people to use. And it totally unintentionally blew up.
I just learned today that Katrina Owen was the co-author of the 99 Bottles book with Sandy Metz.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. I think it would probably be applicable for any language, but I know it was written for Ruby.
Version 2 came out of that like last week, maybe, in like three other languages. It's in JavaScript and a few others, and there's a alcohol-free version as well. 99 bottles of milk, I think, or something. I don't know. I'll plug that as well. And they've also added some more content, so if you already got the first version, you can get like a discount on the second version.
Cool. That's very fitting for the show in general. Make sure there's a link in the show notes for that.
The book is a very brief summary. It's doing the 99 Bottles of Beer on the Wall song, but in a program form. And it is really surprising how much that feels like actually doing a real like program where you have to deal with constantly shifting requirements and everything. It's great. It's such a great refactoring exercise.
Very cool. So with Exorcism, what you've got is, so you mentioned it kind of like, you know, it just took off sort of unexpectedly, which is easy to say in hindsight unexpectedly, but it is a free platform, which doesn't hurt. You know, we've looked at, you know, there are many others, and we'll bring up a couple of them here in a few, but, you know, when one is free and completely accessible, nothing is locked or gated, I think that appeals to a lot of folks. The model is, I call it sort of a semi-self-guided, because you sort of have access to getting in and digging in, but the mentorship kind of does help you along, though you can take or leave the advice in many cases, as long as the stuff is passing, you can kind of keep moving along. And the platform now, at last count, over 50 programming languages. Is that still true?
Yeah, that's about it.
I am so excited to do the assembly language ones. And
we
also
launched this
recently. It's really, I'm really stoked. The C and C++ ones get to do that again.
Yeah, there's some hardcore things like that. And then there's like such a range of different languages. It makes you realize how many different languages there are. And it makes you ask yourself why there are so many different programming languages. And then, of course, and I'd probably go on about this later, but understanding why there are different programming languages is what makes each of those programming languages then fun to actually dig into, to understand why that's somebody's designed yet another programming language. What was wrong with all the other ones? But that's one of the really fun things about it, though. But yeah, a great range. Go and do Prolog, for example. It's fun.
I've told people, especially, you know, I've been building websites now for the better part of 20 years, 25 years. Now, I have stayed mainly in the front-end area. Over the years, I have dabbled in things like, you know, Visual Basic and some stuff like that, but I've relatively stayed out of the software realm. But as I've gone in and out of PHP and JavaScript and Java and some of these languages, you start to learn things like there are a lot of conventions that you can pick up on that really cross-pollinate between languages. And after you've gotten to a threshold, it actually becomes... What's it called? Is it polyglot? Is that the word when you speak multiple languages, like normal languages? You can start to pick up programming languages kind of that same way when you start to realize these conventions can apply. And so I think that that's a neat model to say, if you want to get in and see, and I know we'll talk about this here in a bit, about figuring out ways to teach languages in a way that sort of leverages that kind of strength. But making those accessible, you know, through the way Exorcism does, in a very lightweight way of just being like, hey, I'm just going to start this new track. Just click on it. There's no cost to you. There's no, since you're not paying for it, there's no subscription fee. If you want to just see what a language is like, click it, download it.
Yeah. And that's good because, you know, you sort of, time is your most valuable asset. And, you know, you get the thing, you get something back for that time and you can choose, you know, I'm enjoying this. I'll put more time into it. You learn more. It becomes very in your control, and then I think because of that you have a constant intrinsic motivation to carry on with it, whereas often when you pay for something you can sort of almost feel a bit more obliged to do it because you've paid for it, and then on the back of that it's like your motivation for then doing it is wrong and you have all that extrinsic motivation that doesn't mean you then do the best possible job you can. So time is always the most valuable asset to choose where to invest, I think.
User wise I mean, you've got a huge user base by this point. So you've opened this thing up and started with, you know, Katrina's project, which was open to a few students just to help them practice exercises. And today you're open up to 500,000 users now in there over those 50 tracks, which is incredible unto itself, the scale with which that is growing. You've got, what is it, about 4,500 mentors. So those are the folks who are, and again, talking about time, right? The value of time. These are folks who have committed their time to saying it is important to me to help out other people. Aaron and I mean, how many times, Aaron, have we talked about the importance of helping out folks who are learning and helping them understand how to do something and, you know, differentiating between the right and wrong way to figure something out like that. Yeah, you can pick up Google. It's easy to go to an article and read how to write a piece of code. It's a lot harder to sometimes differentiate between the right way and the wrong way, or sometimes an efficient way and a more efficient way is maybe the way to look at it.
It's you know, in the natural language paradigm, it's relatively easy to pick up a few, for example, German words. I was learning German recently and like pick up a few German words and a few constructs and be able to, you know, order a coffee in a coffee shop. It's a lot harder to come across sounding like you're a native speaker and hold a conversation with somebody.
Right.
And, you know, you can always Google how to translate something, you know, on your app when you're in another country. But to be able to really embed all of that knowledge and those, you know, natural language paradigms to speak fluently, to sound native. And that's really what we try and we try and teach fluency Exorcism. That's what it's about, is that fluency.
Yeah. What about like your competitors out there? Because there are plenty of other places people can go to learn coding online, whether that's Treehouse, Code Academy, Code Wars is one that I want to talk about here in a second. But how, you know, how from your seat, Jeremy, do you think you fit into that sort of power struggle between Exorcism and some of these other folks who are playing in that same space?
That's a good question. So I think, like, firstly, Exorcism's a not-for-profit organization. So I don't at all feel like I'm in a power struggle with anyone. Like, I never go and look at other websites and think, how do we beat these people? Because our aim is just that people get better at programming. If somebody can go and learn Treehouse or Code Academy and don't need Exorcism, you know, that's great. I'm glad that they're learning what they need. Where I see Exorcism fitting in is a few different ways. One, as you said, everything is free, everything is unlocked. So for people who can't afford things like Code Academy and Treehouse, which makes up the majority of the world's population, we're a good space for that. I think if you're learning programming, right now Exorcism isn't the best place to go, like if you're starting out from scratch. But if you're trying to pick up a second language or you've done 6 months of programming and you want to go deeper into your language, I don't think things like Treehouse or Code Academy are going to particularly upskill you in those ways. Like, they might teach you how to write in a slightly different, I don't know, say you're doing Ruby, they might teach you how to also write in Rails, or they might teach you some of the frameworks or some of the things, but they're not trying to get you to go deeper and deeper and deeper. I think where Exorcism really thrives is in our mentorship model. So within Exorcism, you get an exercise, you work on it, you get given a test suite, you make the test pass, so you've solved the exercise. But then you can give it to a mentor and they'll look at your code and they'll make suggestions on how your code can be improved, how it can be more idiomatic, which is a word that we use a lot, how to use that language in the way it was supposed to be written, which is what we consider fluency to be, is you're fluent in a language if you understand the idioms of that language and can use those idioms. And so what that helps you do is, if you're learning, say, JavaScript, it helps you write JavaScript like a professional JavaScript developer would write JavaScript, not like a Ruby developer who's just gone and learned a bit of JavaScript. I think a really big part of the space that we fill is in that going deep into a programming language, really understanding, as we talked about a little bit earlier, like why that programming language exists. What is it that makes JavaScript JavaScript or makes Ruby Ruby, and helps you really think in that way? We're not trying to boost your CV by putting a course on it, and we're not trying to get you your next job. I think Exorcism definitely helps with both of those things, but at the same time, you will enjoy Exorcism the most if you're passionate about the language that you're trying to learn and passionate about learning. And I think then on the flip side, there's also the opportunity for anyone to be a mentor. And if you think you learn a lot from doing the student side of things, you'll learn 10 times more from mentoring. Like, it still blows my mind how many different ways there are to solve any given exercise on Exorcism. So the most basic exercise on any track is called TUFA. And in most languages, you can solve it in 1 to 3 lines of code. I mean, it's a really, really trivial exercise. It has a bit of string interpolation where you're just adding 2 or 3 strings together effectively. And it has a method call or a function call that has an optional parameter. And so it's a couple of relatively basic concepts. But if you look at any given language, I mean, I can speak to, say, Ruby and Python as 2 examples that I've looked at recently. Out of the last 500 solutions to those, 350 of them will be unique. Even though the solution is one to three lines long. Yeah. So,
do you mean unique, like fundamentally unique, or just like a couple letters different?
So, I mean, out of 500, the 150 of them will have already shown up. So there are 350 entirely unique things. If you normalize for white space and variable names, you get about 250 uniques. So
really,
there are 250 unique ways that somebody has managed to solve TUFA in Ruby out of the last 500, and that holds for any language.
So, but with those, I'm asking because I've done this exercise and I know, like, it is a simple one, just as you described it. I'm trying to wrap my head around this. And so in those 200, are, like, if you could estimate, like, how many of those 200 are people who are intentionally trying to do it as weirdly as possible?
Very.
Like, or is it just like, really? So they're making earnest attempts to do it effectively.
And... Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's when you realize there are 6 or 7 legitimate ways that people manage to just define the method in Ruby. And like, then, you know, the ways that you can have a... So there are basically 2 functions. One is this optional parameter, and you can solve that by having an optional parameter or having a premature return on an if statement or having an if statement that returns 2 different strings or loads of different ways like that. And then just the way that people manage to add the 3 strings together. So I guess in that exercise, there are probably like... 4 different like units of that exercise, like op parameter, string,
right,
concatenation, defining the method, defining the class. And if you, there are maybe 10 different ways that people do each of those, say, and then the cross section of those means that you can find 250 right. unique out of 500. So then when you scale onto any other exercise, so if you then scale onto an exercise that has 5 lines of code to solve, not 3 lines of code, suddenly you're increasing the complexity by an order of magnitude or 2. And so when you get to an exercise, I don't know, like Bob's a good example. So Bob is solved in 30 lines. And the Bob exercise is this, it's a teenager. And the input is something to this teenager, and the teenager says something back. It's one of my favorite exercises, and it's a pretty simple exercise. You know, if you write something in block capitals, so you get a phrase which is like you would say something in block capitals, and the response would be like stop shouting, something like that, or right. you know, there's a you finish it with an exclamation mark,
whatever,
and
man.
It's like, whoa, chill out, man. Yeah, exactly. And that you know, maybe 20 lines of code in Ruby, maybe 15 lines of code in Ruby, I doubt if you looked at the last 10,000 solutions you'd find 2 that were the same.
Amazing.
So yeah, and this is where it gets really interesting, because actually what you think about is, if you were on a most other sites where they give you an exercise and then if you solve it you feel like you've won, like, actually none of the skill in Xism's exercises is actually solving the exercises. All of the interest, all of the skill, is understanding why you've made the decisions to solve it in the way you've solved it, and how those compare to how somebody really experienced in that programming language would choose to solve it. What those trade-offs are, what those decisions are. And then as you start to think about why you made the decisions you made and why different people make the decisions they make, suddenly everything becomes very interesting.
I'm looking at the Bob. I'm looking at my solution for Bob, and I'm looking at others from the community solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. You're exactly right. There are so many different ways, and some of these are really clever.
Yeah,
I don't have any more words on that. It's really neat.
Yeah,
like that gets into this idea of how Xorcism itself facilitates the learning process. The mm-hmm. solution gallery itself is one of those tools that, on more than one occasion, I like diving into mm-hmm. that solution gallery to mm-hmm. see how I'm going about it versus how other people have gone about it, and comparing those, you know, the methodologies to figure out how can I improve what I've done, mm-hmm. what processes can I take and look at to, you know, make my code more efficient. It's easy to write code that works. It's mm-hmm. you know, there's always a million ways, especially as these exercises get more complex, there are tons of different ways to go about it. Are you using constructors? Are you making classes? Are you just using mm-hmm. lots and lots of if statements? Like, you can make things work a lot of different ways, so depending on how you go about that,
mm-hmm.
so this goes back to, you know, how good you are with the language, right? Because whether or not you can write something that works versus write something that actually is efficient and looks the way mm-hmm. it is supposed to look, if you are mm-hmm. good and fluent in that language, that's the difference maker.
Exactly.
My favorite, what happened for me, and something that I have not since deployed in actual production code at my job, I got into, I think it was the Matrix exercise, mm-hmm. and mm. got into an exchange with the mentor on that. Because I had written in there that, and this goes, you know, the mentors are the other part of this, you know, learning facilitation. I had written a solution that I knew worked. I passed all the tests. I had code that output the thing it was supposed to output, but I knew in the back of my head that what I had written was not as simple as it could be. But I simply didn't know the better way to go about it, and I didn't know how to find the better way. So I left a code comment, and I literally said in my code comment, hey, this works, but I'm pretty sure there's a more efficient way. You know, feel free to point me in a direction. And that was the moment I learned about spread operators.
Right, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'd never used a spread operator in JavaScript before, and it was like a whole other world at that point opened up. And the way I could go about using that with map and then spreading out arrays, I was like, oh, this makes some of this other stuff make a whole lot more sense now.
Yeah.
Now I've reduced 5 lines of code to 1.
Yeah, exactly.
It was that help that got me over that hump.
And this is the interesting thing is that, I mean, you don't know what you don't know. And there's not a way to Google for that bit of information. You can't Google for my solution doesn't feel as good as it could do. Someone help me. Like,
exactly.
Not yet. I'm sure at some point Google will get that good. But yeah, this is and this is where I think having that, you know, it is like code review. It's like you put in. It's like you're working for a company with some of the best developers in the world, and you put a a pull request in with some code, and they give you feedback, and then you learn all of this stuff. And that's what, you know, we sort of try and be is almost this like crowdsourced code review facility where the aim is on how can we help everybody upskill?
Yeah, code review is something. And, you know, this I didn't write anything about that in the show notes. And now that you've used the words, I should have, because one thing I've written a lot of PHP over the years, and especially for WordPress, I've written themes, I've written plugins, I've written code that will never see the light of day. And one of those things I've always struggled with is kind of that need to sort of validate the code. And there are a lot of ways to write code that works in WordPress. There's also a lot of ways to write really bad code that works in WordPress. And there have been many times I've looked at something, I've been like, man, I'd really like to get somebody to like review this for me. And there aren't a lot of good places outside of like throwing something up on Reddit and just hoping somebody is friendly and does you a solid on it. So getting people used to that process of what it actually feels like to get code review is something that's nice, because when you do get into a professional setting, if you're a junior developer, even if you're a mid developer who's just not used to it, you know, there are a lot of companies who don't do code review of any kind. And so if you go to work at a company where that is something they do, it can be a very new process. And getting used to that feeling of somebody else critiquing your code and your code styles and the way you're approaching problems.
I imagine the vast majority of people don't work at companies where there is code review. And I imagine, you know, a lot of people go through their whole career with actually nobody to give them any guidance or feedback, and their only option is to go on like, you know, training courses their companies put on, or try and read some more blogs or whatever. And I think having the opportunity to have somebody commenting and teaching you and opening your eyes to things that you don't know is is a ridiculously special opportunity.
And it makes you better, right? Like any feedback you get in a workspace, and even, you know, take code out of the process, learning how to take critique in any job is, I think, incredibly important and will only make you better at what you do, because there are, and I think in coding in particular, I think people sometimes get a little protective, especially because so many people are self-taught, and so they get that feeling of I can't be wrong because I taught myself that. And if I was wrong, then everything was wrong.
Or I can't be wrong because then I would look bad, and that isn't a nice feeling. I think I haven't used the mentor feature yet, although I kind of want to now because it sounds really cool. But the couple things that I've learned from using things like this is, one of them was, I remember a long time ago when I was using both Exorcism and Code Wars, I remember learning about the partition Ruby method, and had never seen that before. And it was, I learned it by looking at a community solution on the Code Wars thing. But even working through the ones here on Exorcism, I regularly look through, like I try to, in my job, I don't do code golf. Like I try to make myself readable and maintainable. Mm-hmm. But on exercises like this, like all bets are off. I want to make it the shortest possible Ruby statement.
Yeah.
Cause that, like, that's how I like to, I find by doing it that way, I have to really think tightly and really like be focused on my solution and not be sloppy about it. Yeah. So I get to dive into the API a lot, but one of my favorite ones that I did so far, there's two. The one of them was doing the sieve of Eratosthenes. Mm-hmm. I'm not Greek. I did that in high school in a programming class and I'd forgotten about it. And then, but this one says like, you have to do it specifically using this algorithm to do it. And so I had to like go and look at Wikipedia and like read up on how other people have solved algorithms for that. And that was great. Like I got to learn like some new stuff about some math and it was a lot of fun. And the other one was the bookstore problem. And I put the link in the guest channel. I actually wrote a blog post about my process of working through that. Because that is a devious fucker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The short of it, the blog post is much longer, but the short of it is you have a bookstore that has five different books and the person buying the books gets a discount based on how many of that five book set they purchase. Mm-hmm. And on its own, that seems relatively easy to solve, but the gotcha is that like, oh yeah, if they buy a larger set of books, you want to recombine them in a way that produces the most optimal arrangement for a discount. That was tricky. I think overall it took me like about 6 hours to solve it, but it was a lot of fun. And even though it was really challenging, like I liked having to think about optimization algorithms because I frequently don't have to do that in my job.
Yeah.
And if you want to read about his solution to that, we'll have a link to that blog post in the show notes for anybody who wants to see and critique Aaron and mentor Aaron and his solution to the...
I'm not looking through all of your solutions and X's and working out if any that I can mentor you on. I found a couple of points.
Nice. Awesome.
One of the real cool things about Exorcism that I think makes it stand apart from some of the other ones is the CLI, the command line interface tool that you guys have. This is a super neat way of sort of introducing folks to the process of working through a command line to begin with. If you are starting out and trying to get familiar with that process, whether that's, you know, if you've never used Git before, NPM or some of that, getting Exorcism installed so that you can use the command line. It lets you check out the exercises, run their test suite. All of that's baked in. And so you just install that command line suite and then you can run your tests, check, make sure everything works right, upload that back to the system. It then checks it into your account and then, you know, assigns or, you know, flags it for having somebody mentor it or check it or what have you. But it's a good, very sort of low impact introduction to using a command line, which can be very nice if you aren't used to that, if you aren't used to using Git. I think the whole process itself works nicely when you get used to using that in combination with setting up a repo for yourself on GitHub and then upload all your exercises to your own GitHub repo and store them there. You don't have to, but it's nice to. Then you have your own record of all of your solutions and everything you've done there. I want to get, though, to the meat and potatoes of this to talk about. So you started in 2013 with V1. In 2018, you guys launched V2 and are in, you know, now sort of the golden hour of what V2 is and will be. And you said at the start of the show, you'd mentioned that V3 is on the way-ish. Mm-hmm. Maybe Q4 of this year, maybe early next year. Do you have, is that a brave statement to even throw out there at this point?
So, that's a good question. So I think
it'll be done when it's done, right?
Genuinely, that's the first thing. I mean, I think it's worth pointing out a couple of things. So one, Exorcism is primarily made by volunteers. We have one full-time employee. Then we have, I'm a volunteer, other people, like the other people who are in the leadership team, are volunteers and finding time outside of the other things that we have to do. Every language track has its own team of maintainers that write the exercises for the languages. So V3 is changing in a few ways, but the ones that are pertinent to the question of when it launches is the work that needs to get done. And for that, there are two things. One, we're writing a whole new set of language-specific exercises. So every track is, I can't remember the number, but probably like 30 or 40 new exercises per track that are being written to showcase specific features of that language. And so they'll take you from how to do strings in Ruby all the way to like how to do really weird Ruby things in Ruby. And then along the way, they'll be sort of unlocking all of the exercises that are currently in V2 of Exercism. There's obviously a big piece of work there to write 30 or 40 exercises per language. So we've got a wonderful team of 150 volunteers working on this. If you're listening to this and you would like to help out, please do. That side of things will be ready when it's ready. We had a first sort of hackathon day on it a couple of weeks back, which was really fun. There's that side. And then also we have a load of tooling now that's track specific. So one of those things, for example, is a test runner. So this specifically runs the tests of any solution that is submitted. That is a challenging thing in itself, because obviously you're in doing that, you're running code that somebody has arbitrarily submitted to you on the internet, which is not something you necessarily want to do for your AWS bill. So
what could possibly go wrong?
There are heaps of challenges in that. That requires every track to write their own test runner. But we then also have automated mentoring for each language that is specifically written in each language as well. So we've got tooling for that's been written. A very long-winded answer, as I have a tendency to do, to a simple question of when will this launch, which is my hope was 2 months ago. My new hope is New Year's Eve. My sort of end backstop worst case date is like the end of Q1 next year, but I hope it won't be that late.
You mentioned something there, and you alluded to this at the start of the show too, about the automation process and mentorship. Mm-hmm. So you're working hard there to also kind of automate some of that process on the front end side of some of those initial exercises, right? So that people can get in and out of those sort of foundational exercises in a much more streamlined fashion, so that they aren't held up getting to the sort of meat and potatoes exercises, right?
Yeah. So currently we already have some of this on V2. At the moment, it's sort of semi-visible to users. So we discussed earlier, like TUFA, this first exercise on nearly every track. In a good percentage of tracks now, that's 100% a solved problem for us. So every solution that you submit to Ruby pretty much will either, will get automated feedback. Now, at the moment, that automated feedback, if it's congratulations, this is like a perfectly acceptable solution that's pretty idiomatic, there might be one or two tiny things, we'll tell the user that. So you'll receive automated feedback from Exercism. If it's negative feedback, so i.e. there are lots of things that you could improve or whatever, that gets sent directly to the mentor, and the mentor can then pretty much copy and paste that to the student with a bit of their own sort of personality attached to it. So we've automated a year's worth of mentors' time so far. So what I mean by that is the amount of time it would have taken mentors to give feedback on some of these early exercises that we've saved has been a year in the last sort of 6 to 9 months. So we're quite pleased with that, which has obviously meant the response time on all of the other stuff that mentors are doing instead has halved. I never know whether the response time is halved or doubled. It's got twice as fast. But for V3, the aim is that these new concept exercises that I'm talking about, the 40 exercises per track that are track specific, we're aiming to have like 99% automated coverage on those. So for any solution that you submit, you will get some level of automated feedback from us. And this is a really interesting technical problem because, as I said at the beginning, every solution pretty much is unique, even to the most basic of exercises. So there's two interesting things that we do here. One is that every time a mentor gives feedback on a submission, if somebody else ever submits the same submission, we can automatically reuse that feedback. Two people, so we said like normalizing for white space and variable names and that sort of stuff. So we've rolled that functionality in, and that's one of the bits of tooling that all the tracks are building, that they normalize every solution for those things. But it means that if two people submit the same Ruby solution, slightly different white space, slightly different variable names, we can ignore that and still give the same feedback and just sort of change the variable names when we refer to them in that feedback. So that means that rather than waiting for a mentor and a mentor having to give the same sort of feedback over and over again, if it's something we've seen before, then the mentor never has to give the same piece of feedback twice. And then over time, we just take all of those submissions that people are doing and can just automate rules about them.
One of the areas, and there's a video that you did, and we're going to have that linked in the show notes too, where you talk about a lot of this as well. So if anybody wants to hear another take on some of this, that'll all be listed there. You emphasized the difference between the process of learning and practicing and how that's going to be folded into some of these new exercises. What's the angle that you guys are looking at taking there for some of these?
Yeah, so all of these new exercises are focused on learning. And that's sort of the difference. So every exercise is being designed to teach a language concept. So I don't know, there might be an exercise, as I said earlier, on like strings and how you use strings in this language. And that will be focusing on how strings are different in JavaScript to Ruby. So you'll be learning not just this is strings, because we're sort of targeted at programmers, but this is how strings work in this language. All the way down to more complex things like this is what a block is in Ruby, and this is how to use yield, and this is how you can do metaprogramming in Ruby, and this is et cetera, et cetera. So each of these new languages is being designed to teach one, maybe two, very rarely three of these individual language concepts. Whereas at the moment, we've got these practice exercises, which are sort of cute little toy problems in which you might sort of serendipitously use a few different programming ideas. The mentoring mode is going to change as well. So at the moment, you get mentoring on the sort of core exercises in V2. We're flipping that entirely. So there's going to be no mentoring on that core, on those core learning exercises in V3. All of the mentoring in V3's concept exercises will be automated or not at all. And that's because the exercises are designed to teach that concept. So just by getting the tests passing, you will have had to have used that concept and you'll have to have thought about that concept. So there's no sort of slowdown waiting for a mentor, which is one of the big problems on Exercism at the moment, is sometimes you can get stuck waiting a few days for a mentor, which can be super frustrating.
I know that feeling.
You'll be able to go through. Yeah, exactly. Everyone does. And there's no one more frustrated than the mentors who turn up to see like 500 new exercises that need mentoring.
Oh my God.
You'll have the learning process that you can work through entirely at your own pace. You'll be able to then go and solve the practice exercises, and then you'll be able to request mentoring on those practice exercises, and we'll be proactively asking students to say why they want mentoring or what they want mentoring on. So you can say, hey, this just feels a bit wrong to me, this feels like there's a better way of doing this, a little bit like you said earlier with the matrix example. You could also say, like, this particular line, like, I know I could do it this way, but I don't understand why this is better than that, or whatever it is. And sort of trying to get the student to proactively be engaging with the mentor about what they want to learn from this exercise, where they feel a learning gap might be. Or just saying, like, is there anything here that could be better? You know, I feel like this is good, but I also feel like I don't know what I don't know. So that sort of learning and practice division is going to become a lot harder.
Let's talk too about how this changes, not just for the people who are taking the classes, or not classes, but exercises and mm-hmm. going through the learning process, but also you're changing a lot for the mentors themselves to make that process better so that they aren't coming in and seeing huge lists of, you know, of exercises to dig through and that process. What can they look forward to in terms of, or like, so for instance, I'm real excited about getting through my my JavaScript track so that I can get into that mentorship process. Mm-hmm. What would I expect to see then in V3? Because it'll probably be V3 before I'm done at this rate. what will that process look like for folks who are entering mentorship in V3?
It's a great question. So I think as well, like, one of the things that especially some of the existing mentors worry about is that by introducing more of the automation and by taking the mentoring away from the learning things, that we sort of are making mentoring more of a secondary element to V3. And that's not the case at all. Like, what we're trying to do is move the mentoring to the place where the students are most receptive to it and where they can learn the most. And one of the big frustrations that occur with Nexism is if you're a student and you've been waiting a month for, like, well, months maybe too long, you've probably given up, but I don't know, 5 days for a mentor to come along. When you then get that mentor, often you just want the mentor to approve your exercise so you can move on to the next one, because at the moment you have to wait for a mentor to approve it. And that's like a real frustration pain point, which means rather than the students being there to learn absolutely as much as they can from the exercise and like drip every single sort of drip of learning they can get out of it, they just want to move on as quickly as possible, which is then really frustrating for a mentor who's given their time. And actually, often the mentors are just acting as like the gatekeepers between a student being able to carry on rather than like the person trying to give hints and give tips. And so what we're trying to get to is a point where the mentor and the students are more aligned in their aims. So the students there in that mentoring session because they really want to learn something. And because we're trying to make their questions more proactive up front as well, that means that often they'll be telling a mentor what they want to learn, which is then more helpful for a mentor rather than just being given a wall of code and not knowing if what particular they're supposed to be helping with. Also things like more of this automation to give them hints on where they might want to point a student to. So there's a load of things like that. We're also building in a reputation system into V3, which is similar to sort of Stack Overflow's reputation system. So the more that you do to help Exism and to contribute to Exism, whether that's building exercises, whether it's building tooling, or whether it's mentoring, we'll be giving you reputation, awarding you reputation as you do that. That then is something that is like your badge of honor, if you like, on the site. It appears next to your name. It means that you, if you have higher reputation, will move higher up the mentoring queues. So you're more likely to get mentoring faster yourself. So the more you give, the more you get. We're also going to be introducing an Exism shop with swag that you can get. And a load of stuff becomes unlocked the more you do. So the more you mentor, the more things you get unlocked. We're also trying to work out how we price that and do other things with that. It might be that you get things a lot cheaper as well if you've got more reputation. Still trying to work all those things out. But yeah, so there's sort of some more extrinsic gamification stuff for mentors that we're adding in there, just to make it feel a bit more fun and a little less all about a mentor just choosing to volunteer their time to effectively work through a queue.
Man, that's A, great to hear, and B, it really sounds like you guys have sort of a laser focus on the values that the platform itself really wants to focus in on. Before we go to break here, I do have one actual last question that is probably the most important question. Out of all of them, what's your favorite programming language?
So, I mean, I program in Ruby professionally nowadays.
Same.
So yeah, I've been using Ruby since like Rails came out in, I guess, like 2005, was it? I can't remember. A long time ago now. I love it. So I guess that is my favorite. I also, my undergrad degree was in AI, artificial intelligence. And back in the day, there was things like Prolog were explored heavily for that. And yeah. I really loved programming in Prolog. It's just fun and different and interesting. I've also recently discovered slightly more of a love for JavaScript. So after many years of not liking JavaScript because of, I guess, how it had evolved without necessarily design or purpose, it seems to me that whoever the magic people behind JavaScript are have now really added a lot of, like, a lot of structure and a lot of thought into how to, like, make it into a, you know, a really modern programming language that that has, it feels more like it's got a clear paradigm and clear things in there. And so I've sort of, I've had to really unlearn everything I've ever known about JavaScript in order to be able to go through and feel like I can actually program properly in JavaScript. And I feel like I'm still early on that journey. But for the first time in, you know, I've been programming JavaScript for a long time, like getting on for, I don't know, 28 years or something. But it feels like the first time I don't just feel like I'm flailing around with my arms randomly hoping to hit something and I'm actually like designing something up front and it's working.
Well, if anybody wants to learn CoffeeScript or Prolog, they both have tracks over at Exercism.
We have tracks, yeah, definitely.
All right, folks, hold on for just 1 minute. We're going to take a break and here are some words from our sponsors, but really it's a word from me for our sponsors, but you get the gist, and then we will be right back.
It's so meta.
The Drunken UX Podcast is brought to you by our friends at NewCloud. NewCloud is an industry-leading interactive map provider who has been building location-based solutions for organizations for a decade. Are you trying to find a simple solution to provide your users with an interactive map of your school, city, or business? Well, NewCloud's interactive map platform gives you the power to make and edit a custom interactive map in just minutes. They have a team of professional cartographers who specialize in map illustrations of many different styles and are ready to design an artistic rendering to fit your exact needs. One map serves all of your users' devices with responsive maps that are designed to scale and blend in seamlessly with your existing website. To request a demonstration or to view their portfolio, visit them online at newcloud.com/drunkenux. That's newcloud.com/drunkenux.
Jeremy, thanks for coming across the seas for us, across the oceans, across the mountain blues. No, that's
you
not
really
the way that works.
You didn't have to come to North America to talk. You could have done this over the internet, you know.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, I know. But it's such a beautiful place. Why would I not?
Go ahead and take the microphone away from us for a couple minutes here and tell folks where they can find you, what you got going on, or anything else you want them to know.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, thank you for having me. Thank you to all of our listeners for listening. So yeah, my two worlds right now are Exercism, which is what we've been talking about. The thing I always say is we love people to come and help. Exercism is built by the community for the community. Our aim is to help each other be the best possible programmers we can be. We focus hard on inclusivity and welcoming people. And we try and have the most sort of diverse group of people building Exercism that we can to try and then help the most amount of people out the other end. So whatever your background, whoever you are, you'll find a welcome home at Exercism. We're always looking for mentors. You can just sign up and get started. We encourage people to do at least a few exercises first so you get a feel for how Exercism works, but you don't need to complete everything. We're also right now on this big push for V3. If you'd like to help out with that, especially in writing some new exercises, if you've got any background in education especially, even if you don't consider yourself to be the best programmer in the world, but maybe you're good at explaining things or good at teaching things, then we could really do with your expertise. You can email me at jeremy@exercism.io or pretty much anything at exercism.io. Choose your favorite at. We'll get to me. We have a big GitHub organization. We have 250 different repositories that make up Exercism. So feel free to jump onto github.com/Exercism and just have a nose around. My other world is Kaido. Kaido.org, which is a startup that I am building with some lovely people, which is trying to help companies take better care of their employees. We are relatively successful with big companies. We have some lots of big companies. Google at the moment, I hope, by the time this comes out, will have started doing some stuff with us to look after their employees as well. But we're really trying to push to small businesses right now and to understand the needs and the challenges that small businesses have. So if you work for a business, any size, but especially small businesses, I would love to hear from you about how you would like your employees to look after you more. It's really helpful for us to understand that. And if you're an employer, be it just a manager in a company or you run a company, I would also love to chat to you about that and to understand how you might want to take better care of the physical and the mental well-being of your team and build their health and well-being into your company culture. You can email me again at jeremy@xism.io or maybe more pertinently at jeremy@kaido.org, and I'd love to chat to you about those things as well. You can find me on Twitter. I'm IHID everywhere. That's IHID everywhere online. But you can find me at twitter.com/IHID, although I'm on a sort of permanent sabbatical because social media is bad for my soul. But I'm also the person that tends to be the one tweeting out at xism's Twitter as well, which is, I think, xism.io or xism_io. You might have to find
it. Underscore, and, I think.
Underscore, yeah, thank you. Yeah. Twitter will try and say, I think you meant exorcism, and you have to explain to Twitter that no, you really don't look at exorcism accounts. The website itself, xism.io, is free. Come, join in, just try it, see what you like, try the command line. And keep your ears open for when we launch V3. We'll be making a song and a dance about it. We don't advertise anywhere. We've grown to 500,000 people just by word of mouth. And that seems to be working quite well for us. So the other thing I'd say is if you do like xism and you enjoy it and you find it useful, please tell all your friends and your colleagues and encourage them as well. Because we rely on you all to do that.
Personally, I always recommend, whenever people are looking for like practice resources, exorcism is always one of the things I recommend. Depending on their level of skill, I recommend other tools as well, but it's really great. I'm not being paid by Jeremy in any way, shape, or form. I legitimately really love this tool. So thank you for making it.
I really appreciate it. No, and the final thing I would say as well is that we've been working with some researchers in Chicago. And we're doing some research into how the programming languages that people think about and use affect the way that they program and the way they learn new languages. It's an interesting project. I'm hoping that we can publish some interesting stuff on it and help push the science of programming education forward. And they're also helping us. They've been funding employee and us to help us with stuff. So we've got a website, research.xism.io, where you can go in and you can just do a few programming exercises. They're all sort of 15 minutes to 30 minutes. You can try them in a few different languages. And we're going to be then getting some people to throw some data science and artificial intelligence and just general hashtag science at your code to understand a little bit more about how you program, and we have a survey there for you to fill in as well. So if you want to help us out, that's a really hopefully fun way for you to give us some interesting data to work with as well. So that's research.xism.io. But that's it. I hope you find xism useful. Cool. Thank you if you use it. Thank you if you contribute or you mentor as well. You're all wonderful people. And thank you for having me on the podcast.
Thank you.
Come tell us your share us your exorcism like profiles. Let us see what you've done with exorcism. There's gotta be you can share it with us on Twitter or facebook.com/drunkenux and on instagram.com/drunkenuxpodcast. I guess if you were to share it, it'd be tagging us in a picture. Maybe you don't share it with Instagram, but connect with us there. And then come tell us about it. That's probably the best place. You should get on drunkenux.com/discord and come tell us about your exorcism experiences.
Definitely. We also love to learn. So if you've got bad experiences or frustrating experiences, you'll always have a sympathetic ear here as well. So feel free to tell me your bad experiences so we can learn from them. Although I do know a million things that are wrong that we're trying to fix. But yeah.
That is, I think, how we actually originally connected, was I was griping about exorcism and being stuck in a mentor queue, and you replied to me directly.
Yeah, exactly, 100%.
Brilliant.
And Jeremy was doing, he was living the advice I give you each and every episode when we get to this point in the show, which was keep your personas close, but your users closer. Bye-bye.
Yes.
Thanks. See ya.